Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Trampoline Hall podcast. I'm your host, Misha Globerman. Trampoline Hall is, of course, a lecture series that takes place in a bar, usually in Toronto, sometimes in other cities. People give lectures on all kinds of subjects with the one restriction being that they cannot be professionally expert on the topic on which they are speaking. After each lecture, we take questions from the audience. This is the Trampoline Hall podcast, and we are now doing it in short seasons, in 6-episode seasons, and we are now somewhere through that season. Each episode in this season was chosen by Margot Williamson, who combed through the vast archive of Trampoline Hall recordings and chose 6 episodes just for you. If you like the podcast and you're in Toronto, you should come check out the show. To find out about it, go to our website and sign up for our email list. We will let you know when the next one is happening. For now, let's go on to this episode's lecture. It could contain mature language. It might contain mature language. Maybe it doesn't, but we'll find out when we listen to it. The topic is the made-up country of Bratislava, and the lecturer is Jordan Tannehill.
All right, well, I'm going to begin telling you a very personal story about how I came to be here tonight. About a century ago, there was a plague of blindness that affected every boy born in the Baltic Sea village of Plautus. They were born, however, with the ability to smell every color of every human and animal emotion. As a result of this incredible ability, one became the best falconer in the entire land. That man was my great-great-grandfather. At least this is about the story I invented. This is the story I invented for him, and kind of wished was the case. Unfortunately, it's a little less exciting than that, but I invented a country when I was 10 years old by the name of Bratislava on the shores of the Baltic Sea. It's between Poland and Lithuania, actually. And I think all children go through a phase when they're about 10 or 11 in which they need to have domain over something. And sometimes it's the World of Warcraft. Sometimes it's the Sudoku or some math puzzle. And for me, it was I spent hours and hours and hours and hours drawing maps and diagrams and blueprints and slowly filling what became 6 3-inch binders with this country that I essentially lived in and pretty much had dual citizenship with until I was about 15. Yeah, a little old, I know. And recently, this summer, I kind of rediscovered this, like the sort of the Dead Sea Scrolls in my basement, just sort of unearthing these. And it's incredible what came out of them. And so just trying to explain Bratislava to someone, because even my parents didn't really know how crazy I was. And so I'm just trying to get my head around this. And so I thought I would give you kind of this, like, Bratislava 101 tonight for y'all. Okay. All right. So this is written at the age of 13, and it's because it was kept in kind of a musty part of the basement, the pages did kind of start looking like kind of musty and old and crackly, so it made deciphering my writing a little more fun. All right. So the first written mention of Bratislavian tribe was in the Quindalorn Annalects, written by an unknown Latin scribe in the year 1000. Later found in the Detroit attic of an eccentric cat lady in 1976, who mistook it for a lost Christmas receipt. Bratislava reached its height under the Grand Duke Gracchi the Great, known in the folktales as Nagorski Vaturvi, or He with the Terrible Sauerkraut Breath. Gracchi ruled with an iron fist from 1392 to 1430. He strengthened the foundations of the duchy almost to the Black Sea. Turkish folktales and ballads found in the writings from the Ottoman Empire recount how every brave, even the bravest soldiers from the time, were no match for the terrible breath of one of the northern seas. In 1410, Jogaila and his cousin, Piotr, decisively beat the German crusaders of the Teutonic Order in the Great Battle of Tannenberg. He celebrated this victory with a staggering feast of the magnificent in his magnificent red brick castle on the island of Niederande. Legend has it the feast's head cook died of exhaustion the moment Jogaila brought the fork into his mouth to take the first bite, having just adorned the staggering 50-foot table with 20 fully roasted sheep. It is perhaps not surprising that Jogaila's head potion master, Vladislav Damask, is credited with creating the world's first antacid tablets. The Duchy of Bratislava progressively entered European culture. At the Union of Rodansk in 1596, the Polish-Lithuanian Bratislava Kingdom was formed. Was formally merged into the Commonwealth headed by the monarch King Gunter Gregorius, who, in Baltic literature and folklore, is depicted as a rooster. The legend has it that he turned into one upon his death in order to be with the farmer's daughter he madly fell in love with in his ailing years. In 1579, the region's oldest university, Danzig University, was established by the Jesuits. It was one of the most important centers of the Counter-Reformation. During the Baroque era, a distinctly Bratislavian style was created. The superb interior of the Church of St. Peter and Paul, with its myriad of stucco figures, was commissioned by a Bratislavian army commander for his stillborn daughter in 1668. The Lithuanian-Polish-Bratislava Union came under threat from Prussia, Austria, and Russia at the end of the 18th century. An uprising by the Lithuanian patriot and notorious narcoleptic Colonel Jacob Jakinski in 1794 was defeated largely on account of his suddenly falling asleep atop his horse while commanding the Union forces and leading them unwittingly over a precipice. Most of the Union was in turn annexed by Russia in 1795. The new rulers tried to Russify the country, closing Danzig University and banning the publication of Bratislavian books in the Latin alphabet. In the late 19th century, however, national culture revived under the patronage of a wealthy merchant family called the Nedeski. The mini-renaissance of the Bratislavian culture known as the Nedeski period in Baltic art reached its height in the mythic paintings of Radulska Nereyev and the music of the great composer Kaunas Gregorius, both of whom were found mysteriously and quite coincidentally on April 1st, 1911, in two separate houses across the town, blindfolded with their pants down around their ankles, hanging from their neckties in the bedroom. The Bratislavian state was reestablished in 1918 after the defeat of Russia and Germany in World War I. Trade and industry flourished, but beginning in 1919, Bratislava was occupied by the Soviets and then overrun by the Nazi Germany in 1941. The Republic was briefly reestablished during the intervals of the two calamities, which saw tens of thousands deported to Siberia. The Soviets returned in 1944. Armed resistance against the Soviets continued for several years after World War II, but even more than 50 years after the Soviets, Bratislava still retained its goal for independence, which they finally reached on March 11th, 1990. Coincidentally, my brother's birthday. The Republic was again proclaimed. After the Moscow push collapsed, Bratislava won international recognition and was admitted to the United Nations on September 17, 1991. Not that anyone noticed. Having been a high-profile nationalist during Soviet occupation, Reverend Narondi Vlaskovir was elected as the Republic's first president. However, within the first couple of months of power, it soon became quite apparent that his White Angels Party was anything but the Republic's knight in shining armor. The right-leaning party soon made Soviet occupation look like an episode of the Care Bears. The White Angels' reign of terror began increasingly more radical until by June of 1994, after the violent suppression of the Greek uprising, the nation was officially considered a dictatorship by Amnesty International. 1995 saw the mobilization of several militant student groups at Danzig University and the Oberkreutz Institute in the neighboring city of Grieg. The student riots marked the beginning of a guerrilla insurgency against the White Angels, which, by 1996, had escalated into a full-out civil war. In 1997, several agricultural dikes beyond the capital, this is as in dams, beyond the capital, were destroyed by bombing, resulted in the flooding of much of Danzig. Actually, there's an iconic image of President Vlaskovir standing in the middle of his flooded palace in the opulent dining room in rubber boots, and became synonymous with the insurgency's wheels of power. The Oberkreutz Institute of Grieg, a former art and design college, much like OCAD, actually, it has since been converted into a de facto rebel base for the insurgency. Sadly, many of the great Reformation-era churches, including those three deemed by historical sites by UNESCO, have since been reduced to rubble. And you can tell I was had a pretty cheery outlook on the world when I was 13. Yeah. So I think it was interesting looking back on this and reading through the Dead Sea Scrolls of Bratislavian past, that even at the age of 13, when we had, or I guess actually started when I was 10, it became kind of a Christian oligarchy when I was 12. I think mostly because of my dad. Yeah. And really, it's interesting because I think oftentimes there's the notion that we have to create worlds for ourselves in which we can escape to that are sort of utopias or idyllic. And it didn't have to be necessarily because it was what it was. And so I thought that was, I think, one element why I liked it so much and why I kept with it for so long. Also, there's a lot of interesting mythology within the Bratislavian binders. The first binder itself seems to be dedicated to mythology. It seems to be an ongoing theme. And actually, there was one detailed passage which I think was quite interesting, written when I was 11 years old, about the elaborate ceremonies for a girl's first menstruation, which I'm sure I knew quite a bit about at that age. So essentially, the gist of it is that while the girl's sheets are being buried in the yard for good luck, they rub her naked body with burgundy-colored crushed pomegranates and other unguents while singing of her bear husband. The men go out into the woods and on a bear hunt, the Ursadura. I think I just found the Latin dictionary for that one. And they come back into town where they skin it and do an elaborate dance with the bear skin on around the girl's house. And it's kind of beats the mom tossing the Tampax, but I think, you know. So, and also the origin of the sex myth I thought was also quite interesting as well. This one, a goddess rips open a man in the woods when she's walking through the woods and it's winter, and slept him inside him to escape the winter cold, much like, I think it's, is it Luke Skywalker does that, I think, in Star Wars, I think? He rips open the... Yeah, rips open. Yeah, like the big ox thing in the middle of the winter. Well, I was like, yeah, that's really great. So goddess rips open a man in the middle of the woods and sleeps inside of him to escape the winter cold when she becomes lost in the southern boglands. In return, the goddess granted man the power to sleep within women on cold nights. Again, this is 11 years old here, so this is my reconciling this year. All right. And the final myth that I will share with you today was the wedding dress and the Turkish invasions, trying to explain why the Turks were such an angry people throughout all European history. Well, two monks from a camphor-lit monastery in the banks of the Yellow River smuggled silk spider cocoons into the Byzantium Empire. Now, a nomadic gypsy stole the exotic silk and smuggled it into a remote mountain village in the Bratislavian highlands. The silk was made into a wedding dress for a girl whose father refused her groom. And so in a fit of rage, she went down to a creek where she found a stone, and she picked up the stone and put all of her anger in it, like I used to do, and put all of her anger in it, and just vented it and then threw it into the creek. And along came a fish, and the fish swallowed the stone, and the region's magistrate caught that fish and ate that fish. And all that anger entered him, and he became quite a corrupt magistrate over the preceding weeks and months. And what happened was the girl's father had some sort of petty felony, and the magistrate just blew his top on account of eating the poisoned fish and killed the father. Well, the monks, being monks, would have nothing to do with that. So in the town monastery decided to ring incessantly the bells of the monastery for 12 days straight at full blast to drive the whole town crazy with the hope of driving out the magistrate. So eventually everyone took up arms and torches and pitchforks and drove the magistrate out of the town. Now the magistrate decided, knowing the secret of the silk dress, the wedding dress, journeyed to Byzantium to sell the secrets of the stolen silk dress to Empress Theodora, who longed to have her gift back. And now this is the reason right here for the Turkish hordes invading the Balkans and ravaging Eastern Europe right here. They were looking for those two original silk cocoons, not realizing that they could have just opened a trade route to China and would have prevented the whole thing from happening. So it was really kind of a vendetta against that original silk dress. And there's a couple of other, for instance, a Danzog inventor, Danzog being the capital of Bratislava, invented photography. But you didn't know that. Not Daguerre. In fact, in 1837, he photographed his daughter, who suddenly became a hollow husk of her former self, and his wife, who then got so tired that she was bedridden for the rest of her life. And so, being a sort of superstitious Bratislavian, he destroyed the invention, becoming convinced that it had captured their souls. And Daguerre patented it 2 years later. So, and again, the very, very final myth that I found within the Analects of my childhood was there was a giant feast for at the, well, the Soviets agreed when they imprisoned Fledorska, Grigory Fledorska, if you remember, I don't think you remember. He was one of the political dissidents and a pretty prominent journalist, actually, in Danzog in the 1950s during the sort of anti-Soviet revolts. And anyways, he was imprisoned by the Soviets, and they agreed that that they would grant, as was tradition, was custom in Bratislavian history, to grant him his last meal. So what they did, what the villagers did, is they had an idea that, well, if we never stop feeding him, he'll never die. And so, basically, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of villagers from across the region began spending their days cooking and lining out literally miles to continually supply Fledorska with never-ending meal and ensuring the perpetuity of his life. Which leads me to now say, eat up and long live you all. Thank you.
From Canada, ladies and gentlemen.
You're listening to the Trampoline Hall Podcast. I'm Misha Goldman. Up next, the Q&A.
Sorry. Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Does anyone have any questions? Any questions? Yes, from the very front of the room.
What are the physical features of people of that country?
The question is, what are the physical features of the people of the country? With obvious understanding that these are stereotypical and the people within the country, of course, vary.
Oh, yeah, of course. But, I could have rambled all day about this. I really could have. So, the Northerners are kind of a ruddy-faced, red shepherds. I mean, if you live in the North, you're either shepherd or shepherd's wife, pretty much, you know. So, really hearty, hearty drinking folk. And in the South, though, the South is much more timid. It's sort of a mist-covered region. There's like peat pyres burning to keep off the spirits, you know. And there's a lot of, they're more superstitious. They're kind of meek and pasty because of all the rain they get down there in the boglands. So it's pretty much divided North and South, I would say. Yeah.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah,
yes, okay. It certainly does. Anything else people would like to know? Any other questions people have? Yes, yes, you, sir.
No.
That's why I had friends.
So you were alone in this? There was no, like, I was sort of picturing you, maybe you had some other inquisitive friends who came over and you talked about it, or, but no?
Well, remember how I was saying people sort of gravitate to one thing or the other, and one being Warcraft? Well, I think, unfortunately, in this case, most of my friends were gravitating to that. There was a lot of, there was one or two friends who enjoyed making maps. But they were always frustrated by my inclination to put the country in a real in the real world. The maps, you know, there wasn't any Mordors, or there weren't any sort of shires smacked up a dad smack up against each other because it just wasn't geographically possible. So I would kind of have it out with some friends when I was 10, 11, like, you can't do that. Like, you know, there wouldn't be a desert beside it. Rainforest is not possible, you know? So, and so they didn't like my incessant inclination to place countries in the real world.
Yeah. So wait, I want to know more about this. So you ran with a crowd of people who made up imaginary countries, but yeah. You're an outcast.
Essentially, yeah. We would have geography competitions to name as many capitals as we could.
Bring your own? Could you be like?
Ah, yeah.
Vlasov.
Sometimes, see if he was awake, yeah. Right. But generally I was an outcast, yes.
Okay. So obviously it wasn't secret, because you were with, like, they'd be like your friends would be getting together and they'd be like working on like their Middle Earth geography,
yeah.
And you'd be like, no, I'm working on my alternative Renaissance to 20th century
right.
thing.
Yeah.
And they'd be like,
they seemed to be having more fun than I was, though, so, right. But yeah.
But where did it lead them? Not here.
I don't know. Waterloo, maybe.
Right. Yeah. They have no lectors there. Okay, so no. The answer to your question is no. This was a solitary activity.
Yeah, in my bedroom, yeah. Yeah. By myself, yes.
Okay.
At my dad's house, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Any other questions? All right, yes, you.
Why did you stop?
I'm assuming you did.
Of course I've stopped. Because I'm too old for that kind of stuff, that's why. It's interesting because I think it's in some ways looking back over all this information, I realize that it's incredible how the sort of imaginative floodgates were always open back then, and I sort of question myself, like, oh my God, was I more imaginative then than I am now? And it's sort of interesting because in some ways it sort of got me in touch with the fact that really anyone can be a writer, and I think everyone here has probably made up their own countries or something to that effect, or their own worlds, and like living in their own imaginary worlds. Some please tell me.
Go on.
So although I'm maybe not drawing them on paper as I used to and filing them away religiously into binders, I think there's still a lot of large element of that sort of my love of politics, or my love of geography, or my love of myth that still continues today. So yeah.
So wait, but then when? So we know that you did. But when? Like when did? Was there actually a moment when? Like you've described the part that sort of in some way continues, but when did you actually stop?
I think it was when I entered high school. It was like it was sort of a conscious decision. I'm like, okay, I'm in high school. I put them in the basement, and I went into other things. It wasn't like sob story that, you know, I kind of like. I'm no longer creative.
It wasn't like the last verse of Puff the Magic
yeah,
Dragon.
Exactly,
it wasn't like
yeah.
your creativity walked off into the woods and you like tried to be cool and that
yeah,
was
exactly.
it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a grizzled, yeah, like cynical person. No, it's actually, but I sort of found other venues.
Okay.
So it was, I think it was like the last year of, it was grade eight.
And there was no grand gesture. You didn't like close the book.
No,
there
yeah.
wasn't like something like that.
Wasn't any like Chorus of Angels or anything, unfortunately.
Okay, all right. Okay, good. So there we go. He got older and he stopped.
Yeah.
Yes, you have. The question is whether he played a role in the world through role-playing, I guess, or acting things out in some sort of way. Is that right? Okay.
Yeah, I would often reenact scenes from like really obscure films because I'm I know we just talked about it, but I'm sort of a film student, so I would love to reenact scenes from sort of these obscure Bratislavian films. One like 1982 was like The Birch Forest, you know. It was like the Camerador winning at Cannes, you know. It was really like it was intense, you know. It was really high melodrama, and there was like, and I remember this one scene where like there was this forest and it was all frozen over and people were skating with lanterns through it, and it was like, oh my God, this is so intense. And there was this like, oh, it was incredible murder scene. It was kind of it was great. It's incredible how similar it is to Adam McGowan's The Sweet Hereafter, which I may have just watched maybe a couple of days before. And actually I have, if I can give it to you, not that you may want to keep it, but I have this. There was what was called the Vladansk Hotel Poets, and they were seven poets who lived in this bombed-out hotel during the revolution, and they were like in exile. They were like fugitives, and so they wrote all this poetry, and it's really bad.
Do you have their work with you? You brought that
right
in
here.
Case.
Actually, this is the diary excerpt, actually.
Is a diary except from one of the from the poets?
That's Ona Nyakov's diary entry and how she was, when the milk curdled because they couldn't go to town because there was like, the White Angel insurgents were closing in on the town, so they had to drink curdled milk. Yeah.
How can this be? How is it? Is it? Okay,
right.
I read a little of it.
All right.
Just a little.
Ona Nyakov. All right. She's a poet, so this is what. Still no response from Kerouac. He's likely too famous a poet now to write back. The water in the well was frozen over again this morning. Isaac took an axe to it, and we joked he looked like Paul Bunyan or one of those American folk legends with his plaid shirt and bushy beard. We thought we heard a car this morning on the road in the late afternoon. We ran to the drawing room window, but saw nothing. Our imaginations do terrible things to us. I'm not sleeping. I haven't written a poem in a week. There's a smell like a dead body coming up from the cellar, but no one talks about it and no one dares to investigate. We stayed up late in the night debating whether Czeslaw Milosz was really Pole or a Lithuanian. He said to himself, I am Lithuanian, to whom it is not given to be Lithuanian, or something like that. I can't remember what conclusions we came to, if any. Perhaps where we came from and where we've been is hardly important anymore. It's as if everything has been foreshortened, as if everything is living in the eternal present. Oh, and the milk is finally curdled. I took a little satisfaction knowing it went before me.
It's always so cute reading the diary entries of 13-year-olds.
Yes. With all the melodrama.
Any other questions that people would like to know? Oh, I see. Yes, over there. I see you.
Did your parents know that you, like, obviously they must have known that you were dating us, but what did they think?
So the question was, how did your parents respond to this?
Well, I think my mom didn't really know because I did it at my dad's house because there was nothing else to do there. I would just do it mostly at his house. So he was aware of it. And actually, he was very supportive. He's an engineer, so he really liked when I did all my blueprints for like buildings and things that were in the country.
That was my question.
He was less enthusiastic about the poetry, but he knew, like, and he actually knew since I was like 10 and he was the person who helped me. He was like, you should kind of like put this in a binder because it was like all over my desk and everything everywhere.
It's such a minor contribution.
I
would really help.
Totally, yeah. But so he was great. My mom still doesn't know. Actually, when I told her I was doing a lecture.
Know?
No, like when I told her I was doing a lecture in Bratislava, she's like, oh, where's that? Like, she didn't know. So,
wow.
So I had to explain it to her. I didn't, you all know more than she does, so no. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So the answer to your question is father approving, gave him a binder. Mother still doesn't care.
Yeah. Both very supportive, but I just didn't. I never needed to tell him though. I don't know.
Okay.
Okay.
I ask you, Steve Cato in the sound booth.
You have siblings, and like, are they involved in any of this? Sounds like you had a lot of time by yourself.
Yeah. I have a younger brother, and he was a real sport about the whole thing. Like, we would go on missions in forests to find various relics and whatnot. And no, he's not. He's in Ottawa. He's in high school, and he's 2 years younger. And he was really supportive, and he loves, like, he would be sort of my sidekick when we go on adventures together. So the long suffering sidekick, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I know. He's so cute.
People think that's cute. Sorry.
Yeah, he's doing okay. And he has girlfriends. Wow, that's really, So he made it out alive. Yeah.
do a real life girlfriend.
Real life girlfriends. Yeah. Not Ona Nyakov. No.
And it's the thing that I'm really curious about. Okay. Oh, so in this world you have. You've not only invented this world, but like, because I was kind of like when I was you have this world, you have within this world you have the mythology and you've cinema. Mm. Are there like you drew blueprints?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are the other media? Like,
have
you written, like, the software of this land? Or are there songs, recipes? Like, are there other?
Yeah, a lot of family trees, and a lot of blueprints.
Right.
Actually, I have one of the binders is just blueprints for buildings, because I wanted to be, like, an architect when I was younger. So lots of blueprints, and And yeah, and the film industry is incredibly evolved for a country of like 2 million people. It's like it puts like Canada to shame. So there's lots of film production. So as a result, they have their own sort of award, you know, Academy Awards. And so you know, like I designed dresses and stuff. You know, I was like, oh, that's a surprise. And so yeah, I designed a lot of dresses and like you know, and like yeah.
Popular music? Is there popular music?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, lots of popular. Yeah, so like sort of. Yeah, there was an awards ceremony for film and song, and they ran the biographies and like tabloids of various artists in the music industry, and also aerial views of towns, a lot of aerial views of towns. Yeah, mostly. Yeah.
There's some. I'm gonna go all the way in the back. I can't. You're not. You. Yes. You. You're so far away from me, and you're so patient. Yes.
Yes. Reading. well, yeah. I loved. I was outside a lot too. So like a lot of this wasn't just like me sitting in my room. Like I would go out. Like I would write something, then go out and kind of explore it in the forest. You know, which is also kind of a lonely, I suppose. But no, it was great. I enjoyed doing that. So and theater really. It was another big thing. So. Performance. Yeah.
How could they, was your concern is that his hobby was insufficient for you? Like you were like, how will this child express his creativity if all he does is write films and songs and event worlds and draw blueprints? Like how will he express himself? Like what?
There was T-ball somewhere in there too. 10 to 11, I think.
He actually had a normal childhood.
Oh, you want to know if he was normal?
I did.
You can ask. You can ask direct. You can be like. Did you do like what would be normal like?
There's some organized sports here and there.
What, playing outside? So being outside, you think that's good enough for you? Okay, lots. So you've been outside.
Lots of outside.
And you had a brother. That's normal.
Yeah.
Yes, you sir.
After you stop, and even now, I mean, do you find yourself
to the station sort of arrested? Do you miss Bratislava?
Yeah. Well, I know we're not really supposed to talk about what we do. I do write a lot, and actually, I just finished writing an anthology of poems of the seven poets from Vlansk Hotel. So, like, it's like massive. It's like too big to publish. So
it
probably won't be.
What's happening with it? What are you doing? What's happening with it?
Well, it's sitting on my desk. So maybe I should like, I don't know. Misha, I can give it to you one day and you can read it one day.
Right.
Tell me how you like it.
Okay, all right. Okay. Yeah. I'm an important figure in Bratislavian poetry. Yes.
Misha's a very Bratislavian name too, actually.
Is it Bratislavian? Yeah. I thought it was a little Bratislavian. Misha.
I'm sure it's some...
But they spell it with a C, probably.
Yes, yeah, and a J, I think, too.
With a J, a C and a J.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Just all over the place. thank
you. It's like
the national anthem. There's a request for the national anthem.
Oh my goodness! To be honest, I don't have the words with me.
What?
There is, but I don't. And it's not translated either, so I'd have to like. But I will. If you give me your, honestly, I'll email it to you though. If you want.
Can you remember? Can you remember the tune or anything? Is there a line you can remember? Or a bit of the tune.
Okay, I'm sure I can remember a line.
I think you should teach it to them because I think they should have to. It seems too cruel to just make you sing it, but it seems like if you have a room full of people, it seems like. What can you remember from it?
I think, to be honest, it wasn't translated, so it would be. It's kind of gibberish, I suppose, until I can. But if you
can
want.
Can I ask you to repeat after?
If anyone wants it, I can email it to them.
You don't have it. I'm not able to make you do this.
Oh no, I'm pretty tone. I'm pretty tone deaf too. I wouldn't be able to. So I'll.
No, you don't have to stand up and take off your fur hats. that was the part I was really looking forward to. All right, okay. Maybe we'll end on that note of disappointment. So you'll get this to us somehow. You'll all get this.
Yeah.
Will all arrive in your mailboxes, or just turn on your TVs and it'll be opening the ball game tomorrow.
The Olympics. I'm sure maybe they'll have a couple couple contestants.
So, there are so many more questions, but we can't. And I'm like, oh, what sports do they play? But but no, we have to stop somewhere. And so it's going to be here. All ladies and gentlemen, Jordan Tannehill.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Trampoline
Hall was created in Toronto in the 21st century by Sheila Hetty and is hosted by me. This episode's lecture was chosen by Margot Williamson. The podcast is produced by Josh Block. Our theme music was composed by Matt Smith. Kate Bars is our coordinating producer, and our podcast intern is Quentin Bradshaw. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook. If you enjoyed the podcast, it really helps us out if you leave a rating or positive review on iTunes. Thanks. I'm Misha Globerman. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.